of the Real Deal Podcast on this 31st of December 2018. Of course, the last day of 2018 as we head into looking forward to a 2019. Less than an hour away, or maybe an hour on the dot away from 2019. Happy early new year to all those out there in podcast land and YouTube land. We, of course, broadcasting live here, streaming live with YouTube. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at William Juro, or follow me or go to my Instagram page at Rillo Juro Quinn. We have a busy program on this, again, final day of 2018. I don't know if we ever done a program. On New Year's Eve. I gotta check that. I don't think so. We've done programs on, you know, New Year's Day for sure. We've done a program on Thanksgiving morning. I remember that with one Robert Satt, but I don't think we've ever done a program on July 4th. We've done a program on that day. I don't think we ever done a program on New Year's Eve. Again, happy to be here as we look forward to 2019. They're about to start with Dick Clark's Rockin' Eve. Of course, Ryan Seacrest. We'll be leading that. So if that's something that you look forward to, didn't see a lot. I guess it might be a little early, but I was just off on the metro on the train. Didn't seem too crowded. But again, the party's just getting started. For those of you who are, you know, still young enough to go out, I'm in the house living my best life, enjoying the last hour of 2018 as we head into 2019. But we're going to begin with the league with no contract is guaranteed, the NFL. Of course, the playoffs are all set, and the regular season is over with. Indianapolis handled their business against Tennessee easily, 35-34, 33-17. Just, one side has Andrew Luck, the other side has Blaine Gabbert. So that wasn't too hard. It wasn't going to be too hard to figure out who was going to win that game. All the playoff matchups again are set up. You know, Indianapolis taking on Houston, battle of young quarterbacks that will be battling each other for years to come. That'll be on Saturday. Seattle at Dallas on Saturday night. Cowboys in primetime should do a big number as far as the ratings goes. Sunday, you of course have the Chargers. Chargers traveling to Baltimore, a rematch of a game a couple weeks back. Or last weekend in week 16, where the Chargers fell to the Ravens, and of course, the weekend will be capped off with Philadelphia at Chicago, and that's Philadelphia at Chicago. So the playoffs, again, the playoffs are set. The New Orleans Saints come in as the perennial favorites. I wouldn't put them as prohibited favorites. To me, they're perennial as the favorite, odds-on favorite to go to and win the Super Bowl. Yeah, the Saints, the Rams, and I think the Saints, Kansas City, and the Rams in that order in terms of favorite. The Chargers are kind of low on that board. I think the Chargers are like fifth. Again, I'm still high on the Chargers. They're going to begin some of their people back. Melvin Gordon, the tight end, is coming back as well. I know he hurt himself in May. He'll be back. So they're going to be getting healthy going into the playoffs. But we begin with Baltimore and Cleveland. That game, Baltimore 26-24 over Cleveland. Baltimore really had to fight tooth and nail in this game. Give Cleveland a lot of credit. Again, nothing. I shouldn't say nothing to play for. They were trying to have a 500 record. But going into Baltimore, facing a hot Baltimore team that was playing great football, they easily could have won the game with driving down the field for a potential game-winning field goal, but went four straight downs without getting the first down. Once they got into inside the Baltimore's 39-40-yard line, give Baltimore's defense credit. They made the plays they had to make. Baker Mayfield, despite over 300 yards passing, well over 300 yards passing, I think he had 387, did have three touchdowns and three interceptions. Baltimore did what Baltimore has been doing for the past six weeks or so, that's run the football like crazy. 47 rushes for 296 yards. Lamar Jackson, again, led the NFL in terms of rushing, in terms of quarterbacks. And, you know, when you have a guy, and I saw this in Washington with RG3, when you have a guy of that magnitude in terms of being able to run the football, it really opens up the rest of the running game. In terms of the running lanes for the running backs, those backs that Baltimore has on, those guys are not named backs, and they don't have an Ezekiel Elliott, they don't have a Todd Gurley, but those, you know, they're solid backs. But when you have a quarterback that's a threat to break a run, I mean, this guy Lamar Jackson could break an 80-yard run at any time. It really, again, it opens it up for the rest of the running game. Again, no one has ran the ball, even Seattle. No one has ran the ball at you know, the way Baltimore has run the football over the last 5 or 6 weeks. But again, give Cleveland a lot of credit. Cleveland, you know, could have easily won this game. Cleveland, of course, will be one of the jobs, and we'll talk about more about the coaches, the coaching jobs that are open, as it was certainly Black Sunday and Black Monday for NFL head coaches. 8 jobs are going to be open heading into this offseason and as we head towards the playoffs. But give Cleveland a lot of credit. Cleveland has a lot of talent on that roster. I was completely wrong about Baker Mayfield. I did not like him when he was at Oklahoma. Didn't like him coming out of college. But, I was wrong. Listen, I occasionally miss a quarterback or two, so I was wrong on Deshaun Watson, but I had no idea that Mayfield would be this good this fast. I saw Mayfield as a guy who could probably, you know, could stay in the league, be a decent starter at best. But he's been, you know, he broke Peyton Manning's rookie record for touchdown passes with 20 touchdown passes, has 27 for the year. And really, you know, he's got that it factor. We know he's ultra confident in what he does, his ability. He's very accurate, and he's a absolute playmaker with the ball, especially outside the pocket. He can, you know, he can scramble a little bit, has enough athleticism, can make throws. Again, doesn't have a cannon for an arm, but again, if you're accurate, that will make up. I'd rather have a quarterback with accuracy than arm. I'll take accuracy over arm strength any day of the week. So they have their probably potential franchise quarterback. They just have to fill out the rest of the roster with some, you know, with the draft picks, and just have to get a coach in there that could be in there longer than, you know, 3 to 5 years, and they'll be fine. They're going to be one of the teams that people will be talking about going into the 2019 season for sure. So, but Baltimore comes out on top 26-24. And they eliminate the Pittsburgh Steelers, who squeaked by Cincinnati 16-13. And that wasn't even the story of the game. The story is they came out today that apparently Antonio Brown missed the game because of missed practice. He missed the last 3 days of practice, missed a team meeting, apparently was upset about what something that transpired between he and Ben Roethlisberger. That's what kind of set this thing off. Brown was suspended for the game. Didn't even suit up. And it came out yesterday that he had a knee injury or a quad injury, which seemed kind of strange. But there was so much else going on with the playoff implications and the college football from Saturday. I didn't really think that much about it. Why this guy isn't playing in the most important game of the season with a team, you know, teams where, you know, you're the best player on the team, you're the best player outside of Roethlisberger on the team, and you. You're not even going to try to go. So now it makes perfect sense that indeed it was not an injury that he was suspended for the game. And listen, the NFL and with these receivers, you do not have to have a top receiver of the likes of Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown will be in the Hall of Fame. He's a great player. His stats, his numbers, his production, you know, prove it. Another 6 straight seasons of 100 catches. He is a great player, not a good player. He's a great player and arguably the best, probably pound for pound, the best receiver in football. But the bottom line is Pittsburgh hasn't won a thing since Pittsburgh has been to one Super Bowl with Antonio Brown. That was in his first year when they lost the Green Bay Packers down in Dallas. So you don't have to have look at all the great receivers over this past generation that have not won championships, Randy Moss, Terrell Owens. You don't have to have a top guy at that position to win a championship. And if I was Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh does as well as any franchise at drafting and developing receivers. I would look to move Antonio Brown. He has value. Again, I know he's 30. I know he has a big contract, but he does have value considering that he's going to be coming off another year where he's probably going to be all pro, Pro Bowl. His production I haven't seen any slippage whatsoever. Now, to me, is a perfect time before he does decline. Now is a perfect time to move him. NFL trades are being made left and right as it is. This wasn't the case 4 or 5 years ago, but now in the NFL, especially star players are being traded left and right. So I would seriously consider moving Antonio Brown if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers. Again, they have guys that are coming down the pike. They like the kid out of Oklahoma State, that kind of came on late in the year. They already have a star in Juju Smith-Schuster, who was voted the team MVP. Now is a perfect time to move on from Antonio Brown. So we'll see what happens with that. We're going to talk certainly more about Pittsburgh as they was to me, as I look at disappointments out the course of the league, that Pittsburgh, without question, to me, was the biggest disappointment of 2018. This was a team that had Super Bowl aspirations. They were one of the favorites to get to and possibly win the Super Bowl, and they don't even make the playoffs. So that's a terrible job by Pittsburgh. And it's just more than, it's easy to blame Mike Tomlin, but it's a lot more to that culture and what's going on, what's transpiring in that locker room other than Mike Tomlin and some of his play calls and some of his, navigating the locker room and that culture over the course of 2018, whether it's Le'Veon Bell, whether it's Antonio Brown and Roethlisberger, so some of the stuff that they had to deal with over the course of the season. When you're not winning championships with that nonsense inside the locker room, this is not going to happen in 2018. So we'll see what Pittsburgh does in the offseason, not only with Brown possibly, but of course with Le'Veon Bell. They have a lot of question marks moving forward on that team. They still have a lot of talent, but they're going to have a number of question marks as well moving forward into 2019. Chicago took out Minnesota 24-10. They held Minnesota to 164 yards. Give Chicago a lot of credit. Give Chicago a lot of credit going on the road, beating Minnesota in a game that Minnesota had to have to make the playoffs. So Chicago, Minnesota's out. Philadelphia is in. Chicago locked up a number three seed. They were already going to be number three seed regardless, but had an outside chance of being a number two seed. But the Rams had their way with San Francisco, so Chicago will be a number three seed. Chicago's just, their defense is, to me, even pound for pound, the best defense in football. Khalil Mack will certainly get Defensive Player of the Year consideration, though. Defensive MVP consideration, though. I think Aaron Donald will take home that award. But, that trade, going from Oakland, that was a gift, an absolute gift for Khalil Mack to go from Oakland to Chicago. It changed the complexion of that team, maybe even the complexion of that franchise. From the beginning, he was a big-time player for them. They got enough out of Trubisky despite some injuries. We know they can run the football. The Cohen kid out of A&T had a very good year. So, to me, they're going to be a dangerous team going to the playoffs. Anytime that you have a defense and a running game, again, I don't trust the quarterback in a big spot. That's why I couldn't pick them to beat New Orleans or even the Rams on the road in a big spot, because I don't completely trust the quarterback. They're gonna have their hands full with Philly this weekend on Sunday for sure. So, but I think they'll be able to manage their way through that game. But they're gonna have their hands full with that matchup in particular. So, again, kudos off to Nagy and the job he did. He'll certainly be up for possible coach of the year. I did not expect Chicago to be nowhere near this good before the season started. They were not a team that I was looking at even in the least bit. I knew they had some young talent on defense. I knew they had, offensively, I didn't know about the quarterback. But they are definitely one of the biggest surprises and one of the more pleasant surprises of the of 2018. They go into the playoffs with a lot of momentum. Again, that defense is real. That defense can give any offense problems. Any offense is going to have a good offense with that Chicago defense. And of course, you had Dallas. Before we get to Washington, Philadelphia, you had Dallas edging out the Giants 36-35. And the reason why I bring up this game, it had no playoff implications whatsoever. But the reason why I bring up this game is I don't understand why Dallas was playing this game so hard. I don't get it. Dallas played this game as if their playoff lives, as if the division and their playoff lives were on the line. I mean, you know, you sit Ezekiel Elliott. So that tells me that you're not totally invested for 100% in the game. So you sit him and play Dak Prescott. So you're basically saying that Ezekiel Elliott is more valuable than Dak Prescott, which is not the case. You always, again, Ezekiel Elliott may be a better player and more productive player, but Dak Prescott is still is your franchise quarterback. So I don't understand, you know, if you sit Ezekiel Elliott, why you don't sit Dak Prescott? I didn't understand that whatsoever. I mean, matter of fact, I had to actually check the standings to see, you know, is Dallas playing for a third seed? I had to check the standings. I'm pretty sure that Chicago was clear two games ahead of Dallas and that there was no way Chicago was going to move up. Excuse me, that Dallas was going to move up to that number three spot. And, you know, I was correct in that thinking. But Dallas played this as if their lives were like this. They went balls to the wall. They went as hard as a team could possibly go for a game that meant absolutely nothing, and they were playing a team that had nothing to play for in terms of the New York Giants. Again, entertaining game. You saw Saquon Barkley, you know, do his thing, end up with over 2,000 yards and turn from the line, from scrimmage. You know, only, you know, I think Eric Dickerson and Edgerrin James are the only other rookies to do that. That's from the running back position in NFL history. We know he's a big-time player. But I don't understand why Dallas was playing this game so hard and why I don't understand why Dak Prescott was even playing in this game. It just made zero sense to me. And it kind of went underreported because of so much was going on with the coaches being fired and playoffs teams who actually had games that meant something. So I just don't get it. But, you know, Dallas is going to the playoffs. Dallas will be they will be a number four seed. They will be hosting the Seattle Seahawks. Should be a defensive game, to say the least. Both defenses are very good. Dallas' defense is, you know, top five defense. We know they can run the football. We know what Russell Wilson has done in the playoffs. We know that Seattle also wants to run the football. So that should be a low scoring defensive game down in Dallas come Saturday night. So we mentioned it before, Indianapolis over Tennessee, 33-17. Again, Andrew Luck is back to being the all-pro caliber franchise quarterback that we knew that he was. He finishes the season with, I believe, 39 touchdown passes, second to Patrick Mahomes. Again, Tennessee didn't have much of a chance in this game without their starting quarterback. And I don't think they would have won even if Mariota would have played. Tennessee, Mike Vrabel got the most out of this Tennessee Titans team. We know, you know, they have a nice, you know, Derrick Henry picked it up late with the running game. We know defensively they're pretty good. Not great, but they're pretty good defensively. But Indianapolis has just completely revamped that team offensively on the offensive line and defensive line. They finished playing the season playing great defense. And, of course, Andrew Luck finished outside Patrick Mahomes. Andrew Luck was playing well, the quarterback position, as well as any quarterback in the league. Again, I don't understand how he did not make the Pro Bowl, but that's another story for another day. But just good to see Andrew Luck back where he belongs, near at the top of the heap in terms of the quarterback hierarchy. And, again, the guy – we know this guy coming out of college was considered to be the best prospect, even a better prospect than Peyton Manning, possibly the best prospect since John Elway. He was that highly regarded coming out of college. He is a big-time player. It's just a matter of getting him healthy. It was a matter of getting some the offensive line that can block, that can keep him upright, and they got both. He's healthy, and they have a real offensive line that played as well as they really played at a level level where they were one of the best offensive lines in football this year with that Indianapolis Colts. And so the Colts, that'll be a great matchup with the Colts and Houston. They played two entertaining games. The two young quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson has proven himself to be a franchise quarterback. We know how much talent Houston has, especially on the defensive line. DeAndre Hopkins, of course, is one of the best receivers in football. So that should be a very highly entertaining, I think a high scoring game. I think it's going to be that will be a quarterback dominated game. I could see Deshaun Watson and Andrew Luck just having their way in that game with the defense. So we're looking forward to that matchup. Now we get to D.C. and Landover, Maryland, what transpired with the Philadelphia Eagles and the Washington football team. 24-0, Eagles shut out Washington. The game wasn't even that close. This was as lopsided of a game in terms of yardage and time of possession as you can get. Eagles outgained Washington 360-90. They held the ball for over 43 minutes and I believe 19 seconds. I really feel sorry for any Washington fan who bought a ticket to that game who had to witness that, because it was that ugly of a game from the first play, really from opening from the coin toss, which you explain to me why. And, you know, you look at most teams who win the coin toss, you defer so that you can possibly double up. You can get the ball. You hope to have the ball at the end of the first half. You might score. The Patriots made this famous a few years back, being able to double up a team, scoring at the end of the half and then getting the ball back in the second half, in the third, beginning of the third quarter, and possibly scoring at the first possession of the third quarter. But the Washington chooses to put their offense on the field first for whatever reason, because their offense has just put up, these ridiculous numbers, and they're just scoring 30 a game, and you got the franchise quarterback. Wait a minute. They don't have any of that. So, again, I'm trying to figure out why, the game was over at that point. The opening coin toss, first pass, interception. Philadelphia really took Washington off the hook in the first. I mean, that game should have been 45-0. I mean, that game, Philly really took Washington off the hook in the first half with some missed opportunities. They had an interception. Foles threw a pick. But he also completed 25 straight passes, which tied an NFL record, I believe, with Phillip Rivers and I want to say Mark Brunell as well. I think those three guys hold the record for most completions, consecutive completions in a game. So again, this game wasn't a fair fight. I knew Philadelphia was going to come in here and just run roughshod with Washington. I said it last week after Washington, after Washington lost to Tennessee, that they had nothing left in the tank as far as being competing and being competitive. And listen. I don't know. This was a strange season for the team, considering the injuries, considering getting off to a fast start, considering that when they were 6-3, they were doing it with smoke and mirrors. We know the defense wasn't a legit top five defense, and we knew that they could not keep winning the way they were winning, that they could not keep winning the games in the fashion that they were winning the games. I think this team has a lot of holes to fill. I'm not bringing Jay Gruden back. If I'm running the team, I think 5 years is enough to see to me. And we'll get to this more when we talk about the coaches that got fired. But to me, 3 years is enough. If a guy can't get it done in 3 years in the NFL, then I gotta get rid of him. I don't care that you want to say that this was a year where you couldn't unfairly evaluate Jay Gruden based on the injuries, losing two quarterbacks. I don't even count Mark Sanchez, but losing his first two quarterbacks, the offensive line, receivers, mostly guys that got injured were offensive players. Sure. But the bottom line is those other three, he also had 3 years where the team didn't make the playoffs. So what is the excuse for the other 3 years where they didn't make the playoffs? When the quarterback was healthy. Because in the NFL, you should be able to survive any injury outside of your quarterback. Now, if your quarterback gets hurt, all bets are off. But you should be able to survive any other injury. And for 3 other years, putting aside the year that they went to the playoffs in 2015, but the 3 other years, Kirk Cousins was healthy. And they still didn't make the playoffs. So, to me, I understand that. And, you know, Grant Paulson made a good point about, well, you shouldn't fire Gruden based on the fact that Washington is not an attractive job, so they're not going to get one of these top candidates. I get that. But the bottom line to me is, if you are a top organization, if you're an organization that knows what you're doing, you find that next candidate. Like you don't, it might not be the obvious guy. It might not be a Mike McCarthy. It might not be a Bruce Arians. It might not be an established guy. You find that next coordinator that nobody's talking about right now. Right? I don't remember when John Harbaugh became the head coach out of Baltimore, out of Philadelphia. He was a special teams coach for Philadelphia and came to Baltimore. I don't remember people jumping up and down saying, oh, John Harbaugh is going to be this next great innovative, he's going to be a Super Bowl winning coach. I remember hearing about that. I didn't hear it. I heard that, you know, hey, he'll be pretty good. He's coming from, you know, Andy Reid, he's coming from a winning coach of Philadelphia. We'll see. You have to find a great organizations. Find that next guy. And then they don't just fall in your lap. So to me, I would not have brought Gruden back. Again, 5 years, he's got more than enough time. They have one playoff appearance in 5 years under Jay Gruden. And that team, even despite the injuries, that team is undisciplined. They get dumb penalties left and right. And most of the injuries occurred on the offensive side of football. Defense kind of fell apart towards the latter part of the season. Special teams their special teams in terms of kickoff and punt returns had never been. I mean, when's the last time they had a punt return for a touchdown or a kickoff return for a touchdown? You know, Tressway, Dustin Hopkins had a very good year. Tressway could have made the Pro Bowl this year. He had an excellent year in terms of punting. But I would not bring Jay Gruden back under any circumstances. I think he's going to be back. It's just a matter of, how many years with the organization. We understand, again, I would not bring him back. I wouldn't bring Bruce Allen back. But again, these guys are going to be back because you have one of the worst owners in football right now in Daniel Snyder. So again, he's making money hand over foot. So the losing does not bother Snyder as much as the way it should. It just doesn't. And this year was an embarrassing year for that franchise. When you look at a stadium that once had the best attendance in football, was ranked number one in attendance in football in 2005, to where they're at right now, to where you have Eagles fans. You have fans not only national teams like Pittsburgh or Dallas or Green Bay. You have fans from Minnesota. You have fans from all. You have fans coming in. It doesn't matter who. Houston. You have fans from, I shouldn't say Minnesota, they didn't play Minnesota this year, but I'm saying Houston. You have fans from all over the NFL coming into your stadium and taking over your stadium. Not just national teams, not just divisional teams. You have fans from all over. It doesn't matter who the team is, taking over your stadium. Home game in and home game out. So they have a lot of work ahead. They have a lot of work ahead of them. Again, even Alex Smith, they're on the hook for Alex Smith for the next 2 years with his bonus money. So they can't go out there and get a Nick Foles who will be available. They couldn't go out there and get, they can't even afford a decent veteran quarterback who could be a stopgap towards 2020 when there'll be a lot of quarterbacks available coming out of college. There's nothing in the draft in 2019 as far as quarterbacks. The one quarterback who people thought that was going to be at the top of the draft, Herbert, he decided to go back to Oregon for another year. So he's out of the mix. So there's nothing. Like right now, the quarterback position, who knows who's going to be their quarterback for 2019. But again, that team, that organization needs a complete cultural shift in culture. They have a toxic culture. Redskins, throughout the course of that franchise, throughout Redskin Park, and again, it begins and ends with one Daniel Snyder. So, expect Bruce Allen back. Expect Jay Gruden back. I don't know what positional changes that Gruden will make as far as if Minuski is going to be back. In terms of that, I don't foresee major changes in with their coaching staff. Again, I expect Gruden. I'd be shocked if Gruden is not back for 2019 and moving forward. But they are a long way away from the Cowboys and the Eagles. And then to be honest with you, they're not even as good as the Giants. Like they don't have a player on their team as good as Saquon Barkley or Odell Beckham. They just don't. Who'd you rather have right now, Eli Manning or Colt McCoy? But they are miles away from Philadelphia and Dallas. It's not even close. And I don't know what Jay Gruden's been watching. I don't know. It's they have this false sense of delusion that they are right there. They're not right there. Now again, it can turn around quickly. We've seen teams, the Saints, a couple years ago with their draft. The Colts had a great draft this past year. But the difference is those teams had anchors, and those anchors were Drew Brees and Andrew Luck as their franchise quarterback. Right now, this team does not have a franchise quarterback. Man, we don't know when Alex Smith, if and when Alex Smith will ever play again. So it's going to be a very interesting season, off season for Washington again. They in order to get anywhere close to contending for the division, they're gonna have to knock it out the park in the draft. Now, again, I don't know what they're gonna do for a quarterback. Chances are, Colt McCoy. If I had to bet on a guy who's gonna be the starting quarterback, I would probably bet, or probably be Colt McCoy. As far as the regular season, is over for the NFL. You look at Pittsburgh, you look at Green Bay, look at Minnesota. These were teams that not only were considered to be playoff contenders, but these were teams that were considered to be Super Bowl contenders. Hall of Fame quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger, a future Hall of Fame quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, and the highest paid quarterback in the league in Kirk Cousins, who was supposed to put them over the hump. As far as being a difference between them getting possibly from the NFC Championship to getting to the Super Bowl, all three of those teams are major disappointments. Green Bay, of course, will be replacing their coach. Zimmer, you expect Zimmer to make some changes on his staff. Pittsburgh, who knows what happens with Pittsburgh as far as, Tomlin will be back. They're not going to fire him. But if you are a fan of those three teams, I mean, you talk about wasting talent. Pittsburgh has so much talent up and down the board. There's no way that Pittsburgh shouldn't make the playoffs, should not have been in the playoffs this year. Green Bay, we know Green Bay is a one-man gang. Minnesota, again, the defense really never – I don't understand Minnesota. Again, Minnesota is loaded too. You look at Minnesota, what they have with those receivers – I still think Kirk Cousins is an above-average quarterback. I don't understand how Minnesota didn't make the playoffs either. I really don't with the amount of talent that they have on both sides of the ball, to be honest with you. Again, it's going to get to a point to where, the owner of Minnesota is going to have to start – and I like him as a coach. I think Zimmer is a very good coach, but in terms of offensively, going to have to start looking at what Mike Zimmer is doing in terms of a philosophy, in terms of what – they're gonna define an identity offensively. What do they want to be? They want to be a team that's led by Kirk Cousins, or do they want to be a team that's built on their running game and the offensive lines? I think Minnesota, that was their biggest problem this year offensively. They had no identity whatsoever. So we'll see what happens with those three teams. before with those three teams moving forward. But I would have took any bets on those three teams making it to the playoffs, that all three of those teams would make it to the playoffs. I'm completely shocked that, let alone one of them didn't make the playoffs, the fact that all three of them did not make the playoffs. So, but without question, Pittsburgh is the biggest disappointment out of those three teams. And it's not even close to me, to be honest with you, in terms of the amount of talent Pittsburgh has going across the board. As far as the college football playoffs, of course, Saturday, you got the expected, that was Alabama and Clemson taking care of their business. These have been the two best teams in college football for the entire year. These two teams have been the two best programs in college football for basically the last four to five years. Clemson is right there with Alabama. You want to say Alabama is one, Clemson is 1A. This idea that Alabama-Oklahoma game was close, it really wasn't. Clemson, 28-0, the game is over at that point. I mean, Alabama was never in any danger of losing that game to Oklahoma. I know Oklahoma, put up some late points. I like how announcers try to sell you on the game. Kyler Murray, he's fighting. They're still fighting, and they're still in this. They were never in that game. I mean, that Alabama basically cruised to a victory. Now, again, Alabama made some mistakes with penalties and some stuff that Nick Saban won't like, but it was clear. It was from the start, from the opening drive, it was clear who was the better team. And again, to no one's surprise, that Alabama won that game. Tagovailoa showing that he should have been the Heisman Trophy winner. He was spectacular in that game, was near perfect in that game, coming off the ankle injury. Barely a month removed from that injury that injured ankle that he hurt against Georgia in the SEC championship. He was spectacular. Again, Alabama cruised to a victory in that game. As far as Clemson, that was a dominant performance by Clemson. Kind of reminded me of the performance they had a couple years back when they shut out Ohio State 31-0 about, I want to say that was like 2 years ago. Two years ago in the semifinal. As a matter of fact, it was the year that they won the national championship when they beat Alabama. A couple years back. That was a dominant performance by Clemson. They didn't miss Dexter, the defensive tackle at all. Again, they are loaded. They have so many pros on that defensive line. It's ridiculous. So you replace one. The guy who replaced him probably is going to be in the NFL someday. Maybe he's not as good, but he's probably going to be in the NFL someday. Trevor Lawrence, you saw the future in terms of a guy who could possibly be the number one pick in the draft in maybe 2020, 2021. Trevor Lawrence, you saw him make every throw. You saw him run the ball, show some athleticism. So he's definitely going to be a pro quarterback in the future. Again, I'm not even going to knock Notre Dame's performance. Notre Dame's just not as good. They're not as talented. They're just not on that level with a Clemson, with a Alabama, with a Georgia. They're just not as good. I'm not even going to say that Notre Dame didn't belong in that game. They beat everybody on their schedule. Even though the schedule wasn't as hard as it looked at the beginning of the season, some of those teams like Florida State and USC were not as good as they were supposed to be, or kind of fell off, underachieved. But they still had a relatively tough schedule. Still beat some good teams and belonged in the game. But the bottom line is, you talk about Clemson, you talk about Alabama. These teams are absolute next level when it comes to college football right now. These teams are the best coach teams in college football right now. They're getting all the top recruits, their players. They have guys who are going pro left and right. Once they get there, like Florida State is getting talent, but those guys from Florida State are not getting better. The guys that go to Alabama, they get there as five-star recruits and they become pro. They become pros and become college All-Americans and first-round draft picks. The problem with college football, with this weekend and with the bowl season, is you can't have the main course on Saturday and then produce what you produced today with these meaningless bowls, whether it's the Military Bowl, the Red Box Bowl, the Liberty Bowl, the Sun Bowl, the Holiday Bowl. You can't find, like, those bowls should take place on Saturday. Like, you easily could have had the national semifinals tonight, easily. The only bad television days that you don't mess with, of course, you're not going to have it on Sunday. That's the NFL's day. And you're not going to have it on a Friday night. That's a horrible ratings. That's a bad television day. And a horrible, that's not, you know, if you're trying to get ratings, you're not doing programming on Friday night. But any other night, Monday night, Monday through Thursday, you could have that game on. So I don't understand the idea that you put the national semifinals on Saturday and then come back on Monday with some meaningless, I mean, absolute meaningless bowl games. Now, January 1st, you'll have the Fiesta, the Sugar, the Rose. That will take care of itself. Those games will take care of itself. That's fine. That January 1st will take care of itself. But you can't have a situation where you have the national semifinals and then follow it up with this nonsense today with some of these games that just absolutely meant nothing. I mean, meant nothing in terms of the national championship picture. So college football has got to do a better job with that. In my opinion, again, I feel like you should go from, again, ideally, the college football season should end on January 1st with New Year's Day, ideally. But we're never going back there. They want to separate the national championship game and want to do this playoff. That's fine, but you can't have these meaningless games following your two national semifinals games. Because there's no way, you know, even a college football fanatic would have a hard time getting pumped up for these games today. Real Deal Podcast, as we are just, 18 minutes away from 2019. Happy New Year out to those out there listening. We're looking forward to 2019, taking this podcast to a next level. Thank you for all your support over this past year. It's definitely appreciated with the listens, with the views, with your opinions on the program, on the topics on the podcast. Look forward to having a productive, and look forward to having, you know, going to new levels in 2019. So again, thank you again for all your support. LeBron James, LBJ. Who just, you know, cannot stay out of the headlines, even if he wanted to, he couldn't stay out of it. But he made a comment, he didn't make a comment. The comment was made probably months ago. It just aired yesterday. The excerpt was leaked by ESPN on his birthday as they were doing some stuff for his birthday as far as highlights and things of that nature. Of course, the excerpt was leaked that he believes that he's the greatest player of all time and that the 2016 NBA Finals proved it, that he's the greatest player of all time. And, you know, listen, I'm not going to get into the back and forth with Michael versus LeBron or LeBron versus anybody else as far as who's the greatest player. If you listen to this program long enough, you know where I stand at in terms of who's the greatest player of all time. So we don't even have to go through that over and over again. Here's what I'll say about it. I've never seen a guy and I'll put Muhammad Ali aside because that was more of a part of his persona. I'm the greatest. But when you sat down if you sat down and heard Ali in an interview, he said that Sugar Ray Robinson was the greatest boxer of all time. But putting Muhammad Ali aside, I've never seen a guy from the outside seemingly kiss his own ass as much as LeBron James does. when he doesn't have to. Like, there'll be a generation of fans who put LeBron James as the greatest player of all time. I don't know why he has to say it. And you look at the course, you look at the history of the NBA, I've never heard Magic Johnson. I've never heard Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I've never heard Bill Russell. Never heard Kobe Bryant. I've never heard Will Chamberlain. Guys who, Tim Duncan. I've never heard any player of that magnitude. Magic, I said Magic. I've never heard any player on that level say that they're the greatest player of all time. Ever. Never. So, you know, if you're LeBron James, the problem with LeBron is he wants to control the narrative. He wants to manufacture his way to the top. And he knows, he believed, you know, when he says something like this, it tells me that you don't think that you're going to win another championship. That's what it says. I don't have to win anymore. I don't have to win anymore to be considered the greatest because I'm already the greatest. That's what that says to me. When in reality, you do have to win more. You do have to win another championship or possibly two to have a legit argument about being better than Michael Jordan. This is the bottom line. But again, Michael Jordan, LeBron James is trying to manufacture his way to the top, and that is not how it works in sports. You go out there, you perform, and the narrative writes itself. History writes itself. I remember when Magic Johnson was at the top of the NBA, and Jordan came along. And Jordan probably, you know, was a better, Jordan probably eclipsed Magic as far as being a better player. Probably, you know, 88, probably 89, 90. But, you know, he hadn't won anything. So they beat the Lakers in the finals, handedly 4-1. And after that, it was no discussion about who was the best player. Like, we didn't even have to have, it was right there in front of you. Michael Jordan is the best player in the league. There was no debate about it. Now, if LeBron, you know, were to keep going and keep winning, it could possibly get to a point to where it's not a discussion, where to where you just say, hey, he is the greatest player of all time. But again, for him to say it, doesn't add to his legacy. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't make him the greatest by him saying it. And it really is unnecessary. It's very unnecessary for him to make that comment or to make that statement. And again, I would be very intrigued by to hear from some of the all-time greats. And I mean all-time, I'm talking about some of the immortals in the NBA in terms of what their thoughts about it. Because this is uncharted territory. No player in NBA history has ever come out and said, I'm the greatest player. Even Jordan. And we know Michael Jordan is you know, if you watch Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame speech, you know how much Michael Jordan believes in himself. You know how much Michael Jordan cares about Michael Jordan. But even Michael Jordan never came out and said, I'm the greatest player of all time, ever. So again, LeBron's going to learn this the hard way that he cannot control the narrative, that the narrative writes itself. You just can't manufacture your way to the top. This is not going to happen. But again, LeBron wins from the standpoint of we're talking about it, and it's something that, you know, will add to his Instagram followers, Twitter followers, Twitter trending. So, you know, he craves attention. He craves attention left and right. 8 jobs open in the NFL right now. Arizona, Denver, the Jets, Cincinnati, Green Bay, Cleveland, Miami, and Tampa Bay. I still think pound for pound that the the Green Bay job is the best job. You have, to me, still the best player in the sport in Aaron Rodgers, and $55 million in cap space. So you can, and so you combine that. You combine Aaron Rodgers, $55 million of cap space, and a quality draft, and Green Bay could be competing for a Super Bowl next year. Cleveland is right there. You have potential franchise quarterback. You have a bunch of young talent, Landry, Miles Garrett. You know, get a couple pieces in the draft, a free agent, a couple free agents here and there, and they'll be in the playoffs next year, contending for that division without question. The biggest mistake that these franchises make when it comes to hiring and firing these coaches is an absolute two things. Number one, a lack of patience. You should not fire a guy before year three. Now, Arizona, I give Arizona a pass because it's clear that Steve Wilks shouldn't have been hired in the first place. You fire a guy in year one, that guy should never been, you got to cut your losses. But that guy should never been fired in the first place. Vance Joseph from Denver probably should have got another year. Dirk Cotter, Tampa Bay coach, 3 years. That was plenty of time. Adam Gase got enough time in Miami. I understand that firing. Todd Bowles, 3 years, wasn't going to happen. So most of these firings are justified. Cincinnati, we don't even have to say about Cincinnati. With Marvin Lewis should have been out of here 5 years ago, as far as I'm concerned. But these owners the biggest problem these owners make, you know, lack of patience. And also looking for the next guru, quote unquote, offensive guru. Get a football coach. I don't want an offensive genius, this so-called offensive guru, offensive genius. I want a football coach. I want somebody that can control all three phases, or they're going to coach all three phases of the game. Because chances are you are not going to walk into a situation where you have a Andrew Luck. Okay? You're not walking into that situation. You're not going to walk into a situation like Sean McVay to where you can obtain a Hall of Fame caliber defensive coordinator in Wade Phillips. You have to be able to coach all three phases. You have to be a football coach, not this offensive guru or this quarterback guru or whatever. That's a mistake that a lot of these owners make when they hire these coaches. Lack of patience. They're listening to fans off Twitter and Instagram. They're responding to their reactions. You know, you got to be, if you are a successful franchise, you have to have a structure in place of owner, president, you know, owner, general manager, head coach. And you have to trust the general manager or the vice president to make that decision to bring in a coach. You have to bring. These owners in the NFL and in sports, period. You see it in the NBA as well, with a lot of these coaches even who are winning games get fired. These owners have too much of a hand in decision making in terms of hiring and firing coaches in terms of personnel, and that's why you see a lack of stables. You see a lack of quality franchises across the board in both sports, especially in the NFL. There are a handful of franchises that know what they're doing. So it's going to be a busy month. You're going to see a lot of guys going to you're going to hear a lot of names, Josh McDaniels. You're going to hear a lot of offensive names because, you know, that's where the sport is at right now with the quarterbacks and with scoring points. I wouldn't touch Josh McDaniels. I saw enough with Denver. I think he's a coordinator. But you might see, you know, his name is going to be mentioned. You've already heard, Hugh Jackson could be in the fold. There's even been talk about Adam Gase. You know, one of these coaches have interest in Adam Gase for whatever reason. So, again, the more and more you hear about these owners making decisions, the worse and worse a franchise will be in terms of the future of that franchise, because again, you have to have a structure in place to where you can trust people to make decisions instead of having owners making decisions on these coaches. That is going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Thanks for joining me in 2018. Looking forward to another great year of podcasting. Happy New Year. Later.